Commission. I wanted to speak about a very interesting and important, and when it's directly relevant to people, sensitive topic of adoption in halacha, what is known in Hebrew or halachic terminology, modern Hebrew, as imutz yiladim. There are many, many areas that relate. You can imagine something like that has many halachic ramifications. You have to speak to. Don't you know me at all, Marcel? I went to Yeshiva High. Can I just want to. I'm going to turn off the tape recorder, Marcel. But since you did that to me, I just want to. What does adoption have to do with Parshas Vayigash? The truth is, I saw Rabbi Friend at the Shiva meeting this morning. I said, Rabbi Friend, what are you speaking about tonight? Kriyashma. So that's like an old Vayigash topic. He says, what are you speaking about? I said, adoption. Adoption? What's that got to do with Vayigash? So, I told him. He understood. So, Vayigash is an exciting parsha, but there are parts of it that are not as exciting. In Perek Memvav, it gives you, I guess I have to say, a tedious description of all the 70 descendants of Yaakov who go down to Egypt. And one of those psukim in Perek Memvav, Pasuk Yud Zayin, tells us about the tribe of the family of Asher, Ubnei Asher, who were the sons of Asher, Yimna, Yishva, Yishvi, Ubriah, V'Serach Achosam, and they had a sister named Serach. And we find out that Beriah himself had children, Chever and Malkiel. So Serach was their sister. Now, what does that imply if he was their sister? He was Asher's daughter. Don't say explicitly, but that's obviously an implication. If you turn to Bamidbar, in Parshas Pinchas, Perek Chavav, Pasuk Memvav, there we are told, Vishem Bas Asher Sarach. Asher there, this is in the census, in Parshas Pinchas, that Sarach was the daughter of Asher, which is of course not a conflict, it just was implied, but now it's clarified. Starting off on an issue which is not our issue, but the Ramban there in Bamidbar discusses this topic, as we discusses who Sarach was, and he actually is able to prove, so to speak, or suggest with his arguments that in fact Sarach was not Asher's daughter. And in fact, that's why here it's referred to more as the sister, because really Sarach was Asher's stepdaughter. So why in Parshas Bamidbar is she referred to Bas Asher? Because he raised her. Asher raised her, and therefore, now before we get into halachic issues, so that's how we get to Vayigash, to the issue of raising other people's children. But just to give you some other marmakamos, even more generally, first of all, there's a pasuk in Tehillim in Perek Ayin Zayin, pasuk Tezayin, which really does relate to this week's parsha. Also, this is a more creative one because it talks about the children of Yaakov going down to the tribe. It refers to the children of Yaakov and refers to them also as being the children of Yosef. In what sense are they children of Yosef? And Parshah explained because he not raised them. It's a little bit similar, but because he supported them. And it's a similar relationship. In a more creative way, just to go back a week, in Bereishis and Perek Mem Aleph Pasuk Nun, we're told that who was Yosef's wife? Bas Potipharah. Yosef married the daughter of Potiphar. So there is a Das Lekanami Bal Yatosfos. This is a collection of commentary from the Bal Yatosfos on Chumash. Some of it is pretty wild stuff. This would be an example of it. Where the Das Lekanami Bal Yatosfos is bothered, how could Yosef, if I understand it correctly, Yosef is a melech, and he's marrying a commoner? What's going on? How did he end up with such a shidduch? Right, if you would just ask me, you hear those names, you'd say, how could Yosef marry the daughter of the guy who threw him in jail? That seems to be the weirder twist of the story. But the Das Lekanami Bal Yatosfos has the following theory, that really, Yosef's wife was the product of Dina and Shechem. And somehow she got sent down to Egypt. But in order to make sure that she knew that who she was, her parents gave her, Dina gave her like a special kamiya, a special thing, like a Magen David or something, so that she would know she was Jewish. So what happened? Yosef, we know, was very handsome, and all the girls threw themselves, literally, at him. And apparently, when they were climbing the walls to see him, they threw things at him. In that mad rush, he sees this thing, he knows it's a foreshadowing for the Agolos, he sees that's a sign, this is from the family. This is a Yehuda, this is a Yehudis, and therefore I want to marry her. So now, how come she was referred to as Bas Potiphara? Because somehow, I don't know the details, she got down to Egypt. Who raised her? Potiphar. So it's another example where we see the Torah referring to someone as the child of someone, when really they were not the biological child, but rather that they raised them. Now these are just hakdamas. Therefore, that's why he didn't have any of his own children. Can you repeat that?
This Ben Goldenhirsch.
What? He says he was a Okay. Yeah, it'd be more entertaining if someone else was giving the shiur. I didn't. Okay, good points. They're all good points. As I said, take a look at this Das Dekanim. I didn't have a chance to see it inside. I saw it quoted. Certainly sounds wild. Okay. So, there are many, many halachi issues relating to adoption. I'm not sure if there's anyone who was here or remembers it, but 2 years ago, I think it was on December 25th, of 2 years ago, the Torah Mitzion Kol had a Yom Iyun, in which I was one of the speakers, 2 years ago, and I spoke about adoption halacha, and there I spoke specifically about two things. One was Rachman al-Islan Chiyav Avelus, on an adoptive parent, and the other was, in a better time, Kibbut Avayim. And obviously the related one to Avelus was also Kaddish. So, I don't want to talk about those. There's still more to talk about, and there's even topics that we won't talk about tonight. But I want to speak about really one or two things tonight. Which is, one is, to what extent in halacha do we really view this as, in some sense, a real child, real meaning biological, tantamount to biological child. And secondly, obviously a nafkamina of that would be, again, there are many nafkaminas, the things I mentioned about Avelus and Kibbut Avayim are off. They're all related. But the one I want to speak, right, all good things, but what I want to speak about tonight is perhaps the most sensitive issue, which is Yichud and Chibuk V'Nishuk, Negiyah. Right, parents allowed to hug and kiss their child, parents allowed to be home alone. These are many very, very complicated, very sensitive issues. It goes without saying that no one should take any halacha l'maisa psakim from what we're talking about, but hopefully we'll have a nice presentation and a summary of some of the discussions that the poskim have. So what gives a start to all of this is a very famous Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, as a parallel in the Gila, if I'm not mistaken. Dav Yud Tes Amud Beis, Kol HaMagadel Yosom B'Soch Beiso, Ki'ilo Yoladu. Anyone who raises a child, now the term the Gemara there specifically uses a yosom, meaning an orphan, which is a way of saying the parents are not alive. And you raise that child, it says, if ki'ilu yoladu, you gave birth to them. And the Gemara gives a number of examples that prove this, including with Micha Bas Shaul, that she really raised her sister's children, and yet she is they're attributed as her children. Now, it's worth noting, using that as an example of some of the other ones, the Marsha points out, that it's lav dafka yosom. Even though the Gemara uses that term, but it's lav dafka yosom. Yosom, again, means that the parents are not alive. But even if the parents are alive, let's say the parents abandon the child. But the bottom line is, you raise the child, says the Marsha, don't get hung up on the word yosom, whether technically it was an orphan or not. The bottom line is, if you raise the child, that's what the Gemara says, ki'ilu yoladu. So the first question, perhaps the most basic one, very famous source here, discussion, is when we say ki'ilu yoladu, so does that mean that if you adopt a child, you fulfill the mitzvah of Pru Urvu? Let's say you adopt, right? The Gemara Masechta Yevamos tells us that Pru Urvu, we studied this in Parshas Bereishis a few months ago, one boy and one girl. So if you adopt a boy and a girl, you check into the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, oh, Kilu Yoladu, as if I had the boy and the girl. I should be Yotze Pru Urvu. So the one who first raises this as a possibility, because it certainly sounds very novel, is the Chachma Shlomo. The Chachma Shlomo is Shlomo Kluger, prolific Galitzianer, he has different tshuvas, El Chuch HaShlomo, Tuv Tamadas, and he also has a commentary, Shulchan Aruch, called Chachma Shlomo. So in the first sif of Evin HaEzer, which is the beginning of Evin HaEzer, itself is Pru Urvu, the first sif, the Chachma Shlomo raises this suffix. He says, Istapakti, I'm not sure, when we say Ki'ilu Yoladu, does that mean that you would really fulfill the mitzvah of Pru Urvu through raising or adopting children? So he basically suggests that you could look at it as a technical machlokas. And that is, how do you understand the word? Don't give me philosophy, and what is the essence of true parenthood biologically, but that could take a second to one point in time, or the tzar gidul of raising. He's not holding by that philosophical discussion. He actually has a very technical discussion. What does the Gemara mean when it says ki'ilu? So he points out, tremendous Makias, that there's a machlokas achronim in general, because the ki'ilos are all over Shas. How do you understand the ki'ilos? So he points out that there's a machlokas between the Drisha, Shua Falk, wrote a commentary on the tour, the Drisha, and the Taz. The Taz, the famous commentary in Shulchan Aruch. So the Drisha holds, as a general rule, the ki'ilos are meant ki'ilo. They're approximations. It doesn't mean literally. Ki'ilo, as if almost essentially similar, but not the same. And he says that the Taz, there in Yoredeya, is going to say, if I'm not mistaken, I think the context was Hilchos Nedarim. So yeah, therefore we need to know what your intent was, so that's where that becomes relevant. If I'm not mistaken, that's the context. Yoredeya, Simon Reish, Membeis. That the Taz holds, no, if the Gemara says that something is ki'ilu something else, it means that it is, mamish, it's an equal sign. Like it's a, if you talk, I took logic in college, right? This A equals B means A equals B. Not ki'ilu, it means it. That's what it means. Ki'ilu is just the way we say in English equals. And equals is not an approximation, equals is equals. So he says, perhaps this is the machlokas. According to the Drisha, it's a nice thing, it's a wonderful mitzvah, but it's not, as if you, it's not your child, and therefore he's not going to be a pruruvu. But according to the Taz, this ki'ilu is a mamish, it's equals, so ki'ilu yaladu, it says you had the child. So then you should be yotzei. He then concludes by suggesting that it's only a machlokas in a more typical case of you can't have children, therefore you adopt. But what if you have a situation in which somebody had child or children, let's say, and then Rahman Islam, they passed away? So how do they fill that void in their life? They adopt children. So says Shlomo Kluger, he says he holds, then Mamanavshach, for sure you are Yosei. You'll say, what do you mean? What's the problem? You have children already. The answer is, and this is itself an astounding halacha, but it is a halacha psuka, that if you have children who predecease you, especially before they had children, you're not, retroactively, you are not Yotzei Peruvu. Peruvu is about continuity. And if for Kamar al-Islam there is no continuity because they predecease you, you're not Yotzei. So in such a case, I'll adopt the children. So he says, Mamanar Shachi Yotzei. Because if you hold the Peruvu is the Leda actually giving birth, so then I had them already. And if you hold, it's not really the Leda, but it's the Gidul, it's this continuity. So I'm having that through the Kili Yolodus, through the adopted children. So he says, you're covering your bases one way or another if you had that. But that's obviously an extraordinary case. Lamaisa, that's the famous Chochma Shlomo on the books that's specific in this. I saw that in the fourth, I think it's the fourth volume of the RJJ Journal of Contemporary Halacha Society, Rav Melech Schechter, Rav Herschel Schechter's father, who's recently retired from yeshiva, but Mamash was a kach for years and years and years, a big dayan, a big expert in Gittin, taught some of the most senior speaker classes for years, had been in Philadelphia, got a PhD from Dropsy College, also a very big, very extraordinary Talmud Chacham. Not surprisingly that he has a son like a Herschel Schechter. So he has an article in the RJJ journals about various halachic aspects, and it's a very beautiful thing. I always wonder what it would be like to have a son like that. But it's almost more fascinating if you're also a Rav, but to have a son who's a Gadol B'Yisrael, that's a fascinating, so such a beautiful thing. He's quoting his son in the article. And at the end, he concludes with Rev Herschel, which is really beautiful. But he points out, I didn't see this original, that he said that his son wrote an article which apparently was published. There's a little journal which YU publishes for its own musmachim, for alumni musmachim, called Chavrusa. So there's one of the Rosh Yeshivas that has a halacha article. So he quotes that his son recently gave a shiur which was published in Chavrusa, this is going back 20 plus years, of halachic ethics and adoption, and he quotes his son quoting Rav Soloveitchik, who didn't want to go 100%, I mean, the Chachma Shlomo is a supuk, but basically his language was, quote, a partial fulfillment of Pru Ravu. And at least Rav Meir Schechter footnotes and he says, see also this Chachma Shlomo. So, again, I didn't see Rav Schechter himself inside, and I certainly didn't hear the Rav say it. So it's hard to know exactly how to be magnerit, but apparently he took this seriously, at least to some extent. Kal magadol yosom, bebeso, kili yoladu, there is some level. He also tied it in to the notion of Ben Azai, right? We pass in the Ben, if you're someone like Ben Azai, who's libo, is koshka b'Torah, you're so loved the Torah, you can't imagine any earthly relationships, because you have one love, right? You can only have one first love, and this person's first love is the Torah. So the Rambam Paskins, it was a machlokas. The Chachamim castigated Ben Azai for remaining a lifelong bachelor. But we Paskin, like Ben Azai. The Rambam quotes it. It's maybe one in a billion. But there's such a, so if I'm not mistaken, I think the way Rav Shachman was touching it up, the Rav said, you see from there, it's not just that you're an onus, you're pasur from Puruvu. It's that that's somehow contributing to the continuity, and that's essentially the essence of what Puruvu is. We discussed that again in Parshas Bereishis, who suggested this notion. So perhaps, typically it would happen biologically, but if you have an orphan or you have somebody you adopt that you impart that same Masorah to, so again, maybe you're missing some ingredient because it's not the biological continuity, but still you have the essential continuity, you have the transmission of the Masorah. This issue, whether it's for halachic, or we can also certainly all imagine in the various circumstances where couples contemplate this, and there are any number of reasons or scenarios where, but certainly in modern times we are particularly sensitive, certainly should be, to the emotional and psychological needs, hopefully, that an adopted child can hopefully fill for children who are unfortunately, for parents, excuse me, who are unfortunately having difficulty having children. It's interesting that not only might there be halachic benefits to this, but beyond that, the number of poskim, whether they go as far as the Schach Mar Shlomo was saying, and your Yotzei Peruvu, but very strong recommendations for people in such situations. So, for example, the Pesachei Tshuva in Eben Ezer quotes Tshuvas Bigdei Kahuna, I don't know who that is, very much encouraging childless couples to adopt. There's a sefer which we'll come back to called the Dvar Halacha. The Dvar Halacha is a sefer written by Shlomo Zalman Orbach's brother-in-law. It's one of the classic Sfarim on Hilchos Yichud. So there, he also quotes from the Stipler in the back. He was a Talmud of the Stipler. He's from Bnei Brak. He learned Hilchos Yichud with the Stipler, and he writes that the Stipler told him to write up our learning. That'll be the sefer. So he, in the back, he went through at least four printings, and each time there's a new printing, he has Hosafos. So in the Hosafos, before the fourth printing, he tells over Ramai Sashahaya, where he was with the Stipler, and a couple came to them, and he was very much pushing that they should adopt. He points out that particular Ramai Sashahaya, the Stipler, said, adopt a son. I don't know the context, or there might be halachic reasons why that would be better or worse, or maybe they already had a daughter. He doesn't tell you the whole story. He might not know the whole story. But he just writes, because I'm an aide, I'm telling you, people came to the Stipler, they didn't have children. He very strongly encouraged them to adopt. And finally, a very beautiful mocker, which I only saw today for the first time, the Chazon Yecheskel. The Chazon Yecheskel is a sefer which was written as a perush on the Tosefta by Rav Yecheskel Abramsky. He was one of the Talmidim of Rav Chaim Brisker. I think the story goes that the reason he wrote his Lomdashra perush on the Tosefta is because when he was running away from our enemies, all he had was a Tosefta. I think that's the story. He wasn't a choker that he decided he's going to write on Tosefta. So it's like a lomdish thing. He's quoting Reb Chaim's and different things, and he uses Tosefta. Listen, it's a Tanaitic text. It's just not studied too often. But Lamaisa, you kind of buy that for him, more than the Tosefta. So he has in the introduction to his parish on the Tosefta of Masechta Yevamos, he has a whole paragraph so beautiful. It's really inspirational. About the role of parenting and raising children and the Masorah. And then he has a paragraph where he talks about people, Nebuch, who do what they can, but Hashem does not bless them with children. And he talks about how important it is and how if they'll raise a child, if they'll adopt a child, they will have a Yad Vashem, Bevinyane Hadoro, Shel Nitzchius Yisrael. They'll have a legacy. They'll have some. Very, very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. Yeah.
Once we can be derived one way or another to the Chachma Shmoyim,
right. There he had it, but it's a biological child. You're saying, what do you mean, the dead person? I don't know. That itself is, listen, there's no question. Yibum and how that works is very fascinating. No question, but that whatever the answer to that is, and I'm not even sure I know offhand. Through Yibum what? That's the less a big lumbus in Ibum. What I'm saying is, my guess is that whatever you'll say there is unique to that. Oh. I would think that that's local. I would not. I could be wrong. My guess would be that you could not bring a raya.
We're talking about adopting a child.
We're not. I'm not distinguishing.
You're not distinguishing.
No, I'm not distinguishing. Now, that could have been a topic which I'm not discussing, but that's one of the many topics I could have discussed. There are many milas to adopting a Jewish child, and there are many milas to adopting a non-Jewish child. There are poskim that advise in different ways, and that's itself a complicated parsha. But obviously, just to point out, I guess, what you're getting at, if you're talking about adopting a non-Jewish child, obviously we imply that you're converting them. So and you could argue that that's a bigger puravu. Right? You took, right? You laundered. You're a Malam Bakodesh. You took somebody who wasn't Jewish and you made them Jewish. As opposed to if parents already, if there's already a Jewish baby in the world, so you could say, so I did less by adopting them. I raised them, but I didn't add to the sum total of Jews, if you will. So, but I'm not getting into that. That is its own issues. As I say, there are pros and cons in both directions. Just to give you a few other quick marmakomos in a completely separate realm, which I'm not saying it's directly connected. It's definitely less direct than the issue of pruravu, but it just shows you to what extent in other areas of halacha, how we even talk about, mentioned the Dharam before, to what extent in halachically binding contexts is it considered appropriate or accurate, is a better word, for adopted children to refer to their parents as avi or imi, and vice versa, for the parents to refer to the child as bini or banenu, and when they say my children, they mean. So this comes up very much in a context of shtaros. We'll get to that in one second, but there's also a tshuva that Yaakov Emden has, the Sheilas Yaivitz, where he has the following. We've been discussing some heartwarming, nice, inspirational Yad Vashem. What if you have the opposite? Somebody who just hates the children. And, you know, before they got to cutting them out of the will, they said, I'm going to be no der hana from them. They can't have any benefit from anything of mine. Right? No one's ever been tempted to say this before, right? A lot of bad days at the office, and a lot, and then in frustration, you think you know der hana from all of them. So the lashon that I think he says is you know der hana from my children, and apparently this person had biological and an adopted child. When you say I'm being know der hana from my children, does that include the adopted child or the stepchild, which for all intents and purposes we're equating here? Again, stepchild, I don't mean that when my father's mother got, my grandmother got remarried, my father was in his 40s. That's not what we mean by stepchild. But a stepchild that was raised by the one parent's new spouse. Or, as I say, or a typical, more easy, an orphan who was adopted. That's the easiest, cleanest of the examples. So, then, right, as commonly, there are plenty of examples where there are, in this sense, mixed families, an adopted child or adopted children, and biological children. So who does the hana, who does the moder hana take place on?
By the fact that they didn't differentiate between the children.
So his lashon is exactly for he writes in that case he investigated it and Lamaisa, it's not like one of these Cinderella stories. On the contrary, the father refers to the boy as my son, the son refers to the father as Abba, and therefore his conclusion is he thinks you have to be machmir shene sishv. Shazen nechshav etzlo, kiyu yolado mamish. He treats the mamish like a son. So there are benefits to that than there are things that are less beneficial. You're going to get cut up, you're also written out of the will. Right, all of a sudden, no, I'm not a son. Right? You want to have it both ways. For 10 years, you said, I am the son. And now you want to say, I'm not the son. It's not going to work, Rav Yaakov Emden. The context of shtaros was first brought up, actually. I mean, what is Lashem and Adam? Right. 100%. So the Tshuvas Maimini, which is a collection of Tshuvas, usually, if I'm not mistaken, they're the Ashkenazi Tshuvas, and they're appended al Seder of the Rambam. So in the back of Sefer Mishpatim of the Rambam, in the Frankel, they have these Tshuvas. Simon Mem Ches, there is a Rishon whose name I'm not familiar with otherwise, who has the following case, where one person is writing a shtar to a third party, and he refers to giving something to Bonenu. He's speaking from himself, his wife's perspective. I want to give something to our sons. So does that include, again, it's a family where there's biological children and an adopted child or a stepchild, does that include the non-biological child as well? So Shuvas Maimini says, yes, quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, call him a gadol, you see, it's the child. It's the child. So the Ramah gives this teeth. The Ramah quotes the Salacha, Choshe Mishpat, Simon Membeis. The Ramah says, if you refer to an adopted child as Bini, my son in a shtar, or if the child refers to a parent as Avi or Imi, the shtar is kosher. You don't say that we're going to cancel or passel the shtar because it's Yochel is dying. Meaning, this happens, you know, and we'll get to a related point whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, but certainly it's very common, especially in today's day and age, that not only do adopted children know they were adopted, very often at some point in life, when they get older maybe, they find out who their real biological parents are. So if somebody writes about my father, so that shtar, you could say, is vulnerable to being manipulated. Because depending on if it's advantageous or not, somebody could say, no, he really meant the biological father in Kansas. How do you know what he meant? And shtaros, which are open to interpretation, are usually considered posel, because it's yachol zayin. Right? Like any other legal system, we don't want contracts or checks to be played with. So we do anything that is open, right? That's why, you know, take example, you know, just to give you a simple example you're all familiar with, like in the ksuba, right? We don't leave open lines, because who knows what someone could fill in. So you fill that, you draw the line to the end, to the border, so no one could add anything. We don't want shtaros that are vulnerable. So you could have thought that if this is an adopted child, so he has biological parents, and now he just writes, Avi, who knows who he's referring to? Says Raman, no. If this is, who does he recall dad? Who does he treat as father? If that's the adopted father, he can refer to that as a shtar, or vice versa. If the father refers to all of his children as his son and treats them equally, and he says, Bini, we can count that as well. So why is that fakir? No, why? There's a concept which I'm not discussing tonight called Bnei Banim Harim Kabanim. Banim Mamish or not? Oh, that's its own sugya. That might be next week's sugya. We'll see. I could talk about that next week, perhaps. With Yosef and Yaakov in Ephraim and Menashe. I don't know. We'll have to have yet not, to be determined what next week's topic is. But a major discussion about whether grandchildren can say Kaddish for their, and especially not in a shul like ours, but in a shul where only Avelim one at a time get to say Kaddish. Do they get to go in the rotation or not? This was a shayla that was asked to the Marik. The Ramah has a tshuva. Some people listen. Very good. So getting back to this Ramah, the Ramah says, in a shtar, in a contract, you can write Avi or Imi even about an adopted child. So the Knesset HaGedola, one of the commentators on Shulchan Aruch, says no. That's too vulnerable. It's too confusing. If you have no biological children, you only have one, or whatever children you have were all adopted, which is sometimes the case. So then, okay, who else is he referring to when he says my son? But if you have biological and adoptive children, you can't start saying Bini, it's too confusing. The two member Bnei and Eibshitz doesn't like it, he thinks the Knesset's goal is wrong, that the Ramah seems to be right more simply, and he comes up with the following Hechatimsa. He says, what if the adopted child and the biological child have the same name? Now, that's probably not talking about a case where you adopt the child before 8 days and had the bris, as his father already. But let's say you adopt a child at 2 years old, right? They come to you, the parents die, chas v'shalom, in some tragedy. This is a little Avremel. Will you adopt him? Yes, I will. I have an Avrem who's 7, and I'm going to have another Avrem who's 2. So says Rabbi Yosef Eibshitz, in such a case where they both have the same name, okay, that's Yochel is died. Then you got to be more specific. But in any other case, he thinks it's all right. The Chasam Sofer has a tshuva about this. So yes, there's a whole discussion in a way that, again, I don't know, before I would have researched this, I never would have imagined that this is would have that ramification. But again, I bring this to you not so much because you're having shtaros shailas, but because I think it just, again, it's another context which brings out the issue which is in the most extreme suggested by the Chachma Shlomo, and that is that there could be other halachic contexts where we take seriously. You know, otherwise someone might, a cynic might say, well, that's just an emotional or psychological attachment, but come on, it's not really the child. What? And the answer is, it's not so simple. Forget halacha talking about adoption in a frontal way. Even derech agav, parenthetically, when halacha deals with these ramifications, there is a great sense of taking this relationship as a parent-child relationship with really the utmost seriousness.
Can an adopted child be yarshin? Menatur?
I mean, of course, we'll have other years. There's so many. As I say, there's the cat. I actually got rid of. I didn't do any of the death stuff. Right, we're not doing avelos. We're not doing kaddish. We're not doing yerusha. But there are discussions. There are discussions about all of those things. So now I want to get to really the heart of what I want to speak about, and that is the issue of yichud and or. I don't think we'll be really distinguishing per se, yichud and or hugging and kissing. Again, yichud is not per se something that I wouldn't say it's a positive aspect of being father-son or father-daughter/mother-son. It's a mamela part of a family life, at least a convenient family life. And certainly the chibuk v'nishuk, the hugging and the kissing, the nitzi and the giyah, so that is, at least for most of us in our generation, a very natural part of parenting. It should be noted, P.S., you shouldn't think that it's impossible to have a loving relationship unless you have that. Rav Soloveitchik, in a very famous biographical comment, mentions that when he left Europe to go to Boston, at which point there was a very, very strong likelihood that he would never see his father, Moshe Soloveitchik, again. As it so happens, his father ended up coming to America and was Rosh Yeshiva at YU for a bit until he died and then his son took over for him. But at the time, we all know stories in Europe, you said goodbye at the docks. The odds were you're never going to see each other again. It wasn't like it was a different world. So he writes there how there was no hug, there was no kiss. And he writes how his father loved him and he loved his father, but that's just not the way they did things. They didn't hug. So you can have, I'm not saying, not in my family, and probably not in most of our families, but you shouldn't think that there is such a thing as anthropology and different cultures. But Lamaisa, the bottom line is, for most of us, it's a very, very natural part, and it would be a very difficult thing to contemplate raising a child without that. That's the bottom line. Yichud is not so much an emotional problem, it would just be a practical problem of, logistically, what do you do? Now, I want to point out, and this is an important thing, this is one of the many reasons why what I'm telling you is not entirely a Lamaisa, I am not at all going to address, but it obviously needs to be addressed, I'm not at all addressing the issue of siblings. In other words, if you have both adopted, or especially let's say if one's biological and one's adopted, a brother and a sister, are the yichud issues there? Are there heterim for that, let's say? Because after all, they grew each other. Since they're one, then we know each other as siblings. Come on. Nothing's ever going to happen. I mean, there's such a story to say that. I'm not discussing it. I'm not discussing anything relating to issues of siblings. I didn't say any heterim. I said I'm not discussing it. I'm not discussing it. All I'm saying is that, I'm sorry, all I want to discuss is the issue of the parents and the child. So if we're talking about a son, then we're talking about with the mother, and if we're talking about a daughter, we're talking about with the father. So let's go, so to speak, Michomor Lepkula. Perhaps the most famous and most impassioned machmir on this topic was the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote a letter which was published at least in two places. One is in Chabad literature, a little less accessible, and the other is, and I think it might have been reproduced there, I think originally was written as a letter to the editors of the Otzer HaPoskim. Otzer HaPoskim was an effort, it's still ongoing, although it's kind of stalled. It was like a whole super-duper kollel research project to collect all of the poskim to this very day on Evin HaEzer. So you can imagine the first volume, which is like this thick with hundreds of pages, is just like on a few sifim in Shulchan Aruch. There's an entire book just on the one sifim in Shulchan Aruch that discusses Aguna. I mean, it's like 20, I don't know how many, it's humongous, multi-volume set, and they haven't come close to finishing Evin HaEzer. So in one of the volumes, I think it's in the volume that relates to Hilchos Yichud, in the back they have notes, they have other collected things. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe sent a letter to them, which they published. You have this letter, you can get it in Otzer HaPoskim, that's where I xeroxed it from, that's what the Marma Akum I put on your sheet, where the Rebbe writes, Osir Gomor, there are no heterim period. Yichud is Osir, a hug is Osir, a kiss is Osir, a handshake is Osir. Anything that would be Osir with anyone else in the world is usher between this chveis mother and adoptive son, father and adoptive daughter. And I, you'll say, no, one second. Going back to the time of the Gemara, let alone the time of the Chumash, but even the time of the Gemara, we have many examples of Amoraim adopting children. We have the call him a Gadol Gemara. It's like a, it's not just something that like happens in Jewish families. It's like celebrated. How come no one else, and he says, you look all of Shas. In Shas, they never discuss it. Shulchan Aruch is not discussed. How come no one ever spoke about it before? He says a fascinating thing. Is it was different. And here he means this in a good way, not a bad way. I would use the marshal of Cinderella, but that will make it sound bad, and he means it good. Namely, he says that back in the day, so you raised a child, it was a wonderful thing, you raised a non-biological child, but everybody, including that child, knew that that they were a non-biological child, that you had taken them in, and you were raising them. So it was obvious that it was usher. For generations. No one had to write about it, because of course it was usher. Says the Rebbe, but in our generation, where we treat the child just like our own children, and we don't even tell them that they're adopted. So then, it's really, of course, it's usher, but people, he says, and admittedly, other people, he says, he's like shrying, he's crying, the Rebbe. People who are otherwise, medakte kula v'chamura, they do everything right, can't understand. People. He says he's looking around at families, and their mamish being over this isser all the time, he doesn't understand it. They think, because it used to be that people weren't nizer in it. He says, no, people are always nizer in it, you just didn't realize. But because you tricked yourself, because you treat this child with such love, so you convince yourself that it's as if it's your child, and therefore you're being nishal in it. But really, it's a big mistake, says the Rebbe. Therefore, and don't tine on me, how come no one ever said this before me? And number three, and what's the therefore? Here's the point. This is why I say he's the most machmir. He's not the only one who says it's usur. We'll get to that in a second. But why is he the most machmir? Because the Rebbe, then putting on his psychologist hat, I think he had the same pitch, but he says, therefore, he is against adoption. Why? Because he says very simply, kim'at she'ef sh'alizar mimenu. So how can you put a loving, normal, emotional parent in a situation where they're going to have to give, and not be able to express that kind of... He's not talking just about the inconveniences of yichud, that too. But it means, I think he's really talking about the hugging and... You know, you can't put people in a situation where they can't express their hakar satov / their love for one another. And therefore, he is against adoption. Now, I didn't have a chance to look at it, but a friend of mine told me that if you look in Panine Harav, which is Rav Hirschel Schachter's second volume of his intellectual biography of Soloveitchik, page 200 and something, I forget, because I had it in my shul office, I was working from home today, so I didn't have a chance to look it up. But he writes there, I think, I didn't have a chance to look at it apparently, about a story or stories of Lubavitcher's coming from Soloveitchik. Because this was known as the Shita of the Rebbe, but they wanted a different Rebbe for these shilas. Not everyone can live under that standard. But apparently, again, I don't have access to many Chabadskers, but apparently this is known, and in terms of a communal standard, widely known as a Chabad standard. The Rebbe is very, very strong in this letter. Very strong. Now, it should be pointed out that perhaps, again, I'm not saying that the Rebbe would all of a sudden change his mind. I don't know. But one of the things Marcel asked, how does he know what it was like 100, 200, 300 years ago? But the other thing is, he assumes, leave that aside, I don't know the answer to that question. But he also makes an assumption about today's reality. What was his assumption? He had two points of his assumption, if you read it carefully. One was that they love the child and treat the child just like one of their biological children. Fine. And then he writes, and they don't even tell the child. And that is part of why he thinks it's such a problem. It's possible that the reason we'll see shortly why there are many, if you will, there's basically three schools of thought here, why there's a middle school, which we'll see momentarily, which A, thinks it's usur, but yet still says adoption is a good thing. It could be, because they actually hold that part of the responsibility of being an adoptive parent is you have a chiv at an early age, not just emotionally and psychologically, because every generation the psychologists will change their mind. Used to think it's not a good thing, now they do think it is a good thing to tell them, and probably in 10 years they'll change their mind. That these things are cyclical, unfortunately. So it depends on when you ask and who you ask. But even if you'll say, which I assume is true to this day, that the majority thoughts in the psychological, the mental health profession is that you should tell the adopted child the truth. Nevertheless, it's not just that. There's a halachic obligation. So I give you here a whole list of maramakomos. Rabbi Shafaitin in the Tshuva, Rav Henkin in the Tshuva, Minchas Yitzchak in the Tshuva, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Menashe Klein, Imamish got the whole spectrum. And I left out a few. All Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is quoted by his grandson-in-law, Rabbi Neustadt. All hold b'peh echad that there's an absolute chiyuv. Why? Again, not because of the emotional issues that is perhaps beneficial, but because he says all of the yichus issues. That's the issue. That's the big ach v'achos. We don't want to marry his sister. We don't want to marry him. If people in Judaism, you need to know your yichus. You need to know your family tree. You need to know where you come from. Now the doctors will tell you, you need to know for your hereditary health risk. You need to know.
And then if one's adopting a non-Jewish child, they have to tell them by bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah because they have to...
So Moshe Feinstein had discussed that. Again, the question of what you have to do with an adopted non-Jewish child, or for that matter, just converts, that's itself its own fascinating shaila, and there's different shitas on that. But pashtas, you're definitely correct. That's 100%. The shaila is, what if you didn't tell them? The pashtas from the Gemara sounds like if you didn't tell them, and they weren't affirmatively makabel at 13, that maybe the geiris didn't work. And yet there are others, if I'm not mistaken, like Ramosha, who have chiddush, that basically there's like 1 second. And we assume that he says yes, unless he says no. And therefore, if you don't tell the child, the geiris might still be chal. But that's, like I said, that's more of a geiris shaila. Let me get to the middle position. So as I said, so it could be, by the way, that that's why there are so many people, that there's really only one person out on that limb, and that's Lubavitcher Rebbe. He's the only one that I know of that actively apparently discouraged it. However, I even shouldn't say actively, he published this letter and he writes how upset he is. I guess that I would call that active. There is a whole middle position, which is frankly the majority position. The majority position of post-scheme is a middle approach, namely that we're very, very pro-adoption, but you have to know the risks. And the risks are that yichud is usur, and negiya chibur v'nishuk is usur. Who says so? Many, many people. So for example, the Sefer Dvar Halacha quotes from the Chazon Ish. And this Otzra Poskim also on the same pages quotes a letter that some Rav wrote, and he got to sign the bottom of the letter from some Kolkore in Israel, the Stipler, and Rav Ezra Ataya, who was a big Sephardi Rosh Hashiva in Parat Yosef, and the Tribuner, the Dovid Misharim, all held this way, as I said, the Chazon Ish. Rav Yeshua Ehrenberg, the Dvar Yeshua, who was the Ad Bezdin of Tel Aviv, the Minchas Yitzhak, Rav Rosner, the Shevet Levi, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rav El Yashiv, all hold, Negia is Aser, Yichud is Aser. It's difficult, but you should still adopt children. It's a wonderful thing. It's a big mitzvah. It's a big chesed. It's good for you. It's good for them. It's wonderful. But you have to know, you have to know that there's going to be a challenge. Emotionally a challenge. Logistical challenges. Period. That's the middle position. And finally, the third position, which is a minority view, but as I said, I'm not here to paskin in whether one should or could rely on them, but we should know that there is this third view. And there is a view that is matir. There is a view that is matir. Perhaps the most well-known matir in this context is the Tzitz Eliezer. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, many of the more recent people who wrote these tshuvas trying to be machmir were in response to Tzitz Eliezer's kulas. So they write some of the tshuvas. I don't understand how this person can be matir, you know. But the truth is, I don't have a further context, and I didn't have a chance to call Rav Schechter today, but Rav Meir Schechter in that same article quotes, and again, perhaps this relates to that same story with the contrast with the Baal Tzareva, but the Rav Meir Schechter quotes that, in a context, and this is also true for the Tzitz Eliezer, they both say that there's a major difference between if you raise a child, you adopt someone who's a baby, I don't know, 1 month, 8 days, I don't know if they specify, but they speak about raising a little child, being the Gadel, a baby, your whole life. So mamash, the child's whole life, they treat you as parent. That's obviously not the same as adopting a 10-year-old. Now you'll say, from the Hilchos Chesed, maybe it's a bigger Chesed to adopt a 10-year-old. And a Hanami. But then already you can't say, whatever the relationship is, it could be a wonderful relationship, but it can't be, you're not going to have the heter that we treat you like parents and child. But if the Tzitz Eliezer says, and apparently Rav Meir Schechter says, this was apparently Rav Soloveitchik's view as well, if you raise the child, then we can be Mekel. Now, what's the basis of the Heter? What would be the basis of the Heter? So there seems to be two schools. Again, I think the impression I'm getting, and it's not fair to be Medayik just so secondhand from this English article, but it sounds like this was Soloveitchik's view, and it's definitely the Tzitz Eliezer's view, and this is the following. That when adoption occurs at young age, then we simply assume that there's no Yetzer Hara. Especially Yichud, but really also true for Negia. The assumption that these are los sikra v'legado sazerva. These are siyogim daraisa perhaps, yichud with a non-erva is only darabonon, that's exera stavramala, but even if it's daraisa, so it's still exera daraisa, then we're worried about what could happen. And if you think that it's crazy, so you should know. If you know anything, you know that it's not crazy. In fact, I hold that the single most logical halacha in all of the tayag is yichud. Just last week, a friend of mine who's in Kollel, but has a shtickle rabbinic. Anyway, a young frum girl comes to him crying, essentially to ask a shiloh, and really it's all about the fact that she went out on a date, and now she's worried that maybe she's pregnant. A shakov girl. So he was saying that it's like, you know, it's like such aleph, like, she's telling the story, like, halfway through, he already has the red flag. Because if halfway through they had not gone together to that isolated place, then all the other yisurim that ended up happening never could have happened. Yichud's ingenious. So says the Tzitz Eliezer, the whole reason for Yichud is because human beings are human and they have Yetzer Hara and therefore we want. But there's an assumption that with what he called natural relationships, biological relationships, there is no Yetzer Hara. Now you'll ask me, what about child molestation, etc.? So either it wasn't as well known then, or that's an unnatural. Right? That's like Rav Moshe Feinstein says about homosexuality. That's an unnatural perversion. And certainly, I would assume, personally, without any scientific or halakhic expertise, 100%. I mean, the average normal human being cannot even be masig the Yetzer Hara to be involved with children. So, given that fact, the typical father-child, it's not even, to say there's no Yetzer Hara doesn't even do it justice. It's so far removed, because there's the parent-child relationship. So, the Tzitz Eliezer says that if you had that relationship, you raise the child from infancy, so then that same unnaturalness, that same inability to comprehend that there would be such Yetzer Hara, he assumes appears already. However, as I say, he points out, that would not be true if you adopted a child at an older age. If you adopt a baby in a rate, again, what, how young is young, I don't know, I don't think he specifies, but let's just talk about a baby. If you adopt a baby, so then that's there. Now, the truth is, as I say, there was, I wrote down on you, on the sheet here, three tshuvas. The first tshuva was originally one he wrote. The second two tshuvas are responses. The first one of the second tshuva I wrote down here is a response of Unterman, who at the time was the chief rabbi of Israel, who went nuts against him. And the second one was the Devar Yeshua, Yeshua Ehrenberg, at the time the Abbez and the Tel Aviv went nuts and said, how could he be matir? You know, who gave you? But that was what Tzitz Eliezer wanted to say. Closer to home, in a somewhat ambiguous tshuva, he goes back and forth, it's really hard to pin down, but Rav Moshe Feinstein is also Mekel. Rav Moshe Feinstein also seems to be Mekel. This is in Eben Ezer and Chelik Dalid, where Rav Moshe Feinstein, again, at different points in the tshuva, he gives different impressions, but at some point in the tshuva, he definitely makes the following argument, which is that he matirs yichud, and by extension other things, but he gives, at least from the yichud perspective, a different svara than the Tzitz Eliezer. And that is, what's a classic heter in Hilchos Yichud? Fala b'ir. So he says there, you'll never, again, maybe you'll say a chush machish, but what he says, and I didn't check the date for when he wrote this tshuva, he says, you don't have to worry about this father doing anything with his adopted daughter, because he knows that the daughter will tell his wife. Not just that she'll come in, that's, he says, but she'll tell. He talks about this with teachers also. She'll tell the teacher, she'll tell her mother. And therefore, that is alpha, the siyug, that prevents anything from happening. And therefore, because of that fear that he has, therefore, nothing's going to happen. Now, it's important to note that there's a very, yeah, but he throws in, and then he, as I say, it's a confusing tshuva, because then he throws in the whole, a similar idea of the natural relationship. It's a tivy relationship, and therefore he's matir. He explicitly, at one point in the line, he says, Chibuk Benichuk, hug and kisses, he does say so. But it's important to know, even if we assume that Rav Moshe is Mekel, the differences between him and Tzitz Eliezer are major nafkaminas. Rav Moshe is more Mekel, and that he doesn't make any distinction about the age. If you could adopt a 12-year-old. But if you're married, so you're still worried about the Baal HaBir, you're still worried about your wife finding out.
Well,
Baal HaBir is... Wait. But, according to Tzitz Eliezer, but according to Moshe, you have a big kumra. What if you're an alman? But if you're divorced or a widower. So you spent 10 years raising the child, or Moshe said it was mother, and then Nebuch, your wife leaves you, or you become a widower, you can no longer have yichud with her. Because it was all based on the fear of the wife. That's Moshe's tshuva, kula nechumra. The Tzitz Eliezer doesn't care about if you're married or not. If you raised her, you raised her. On the other hand, he limits it to the young age. Listen, we're running out of time, I apologize. I just want to add the following, which is the last piece on the sheet, which is, even if you assume it's usher, which is, again, the majority middle school, are there any exceptions, and B, at what age does it start? So are there any exceptions? The Shara Mitzion of Halacha, Siddusha Posek, wrote a commentary on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So he has a head there. This relates to, I'm going to have to just, after the Shia, I'll talk to you about it. I don't know how people, I'm running late, I'm sorry. So he writes the following, that for short periods of time, even though he assumes it's otherwise usher, but even if, as long as your wife is in, even if she's out of sleep, as long as it's not too long, he doesn't give exactly a timetable for what's too long. A few hours, a whole day, I'm not sure. But as long as it's not that she went away for a week on business, so he holds, even though technically it's usher, but as long as you're married and your wife could come back, he's makel for what he calls a short period of time as opposed to a long period of time. In terms of the ages, so Rav Moshe Feinstein, again, this is a part of the tshuva that's a little bit complicated, because before he got to his big heter, which seems like it's totally mutter, he says, well, mustama it's mutter until 7 or 8. He came up with that number, 7 or 8. Other poskim don't understand where that comes from, because the Shulchan Aruch, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, I have an Ezra, the Hilchos Yichud begins for a girl, and she's 3. However, there's a very famous Chazon Ish, and with this we'll end. Chazon Ish in Hilchos Kriyas Shema, when it speaks about davening in front of an erva, so the Chazon Ish there says, don't get caught up, hung up on ages. It has nothing to do with the age of the Chazon Ish. It's not an age, it's an adin in ages, it's a din, it's totally from girl to girl, it's a din in Metzius. If she is physically mature, that's when it becomes a problem. Once you start looking at her more as a Nara and not just a Katana, not, it doesn't have to be an adult, but already a Nara, she's already, again, I don't know what the word would be. Huh? No, I'm saying I don't know. I'm saying Nara in other contexts has a technical term, age-wise. He's not talking about that. So the post can say perhaps this Chazanish is referring to something like 5 or 6. The problem is, Rav Yashiv and others say they don't understand this Chazanish. The Shulchan Aruch is explicit, 3. So they say, oh, what the Chazon Ish means is that's only, it's a different gedarim. That's Al Tilchos, Kriya Shema, or davening in front of an Erva. But Enechanami, when it comes to Yichud, it goes back to three. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, quoted by the Mishmas Avraham, says no. The Chazon Ish understood, however he does the Shulchan Aruch, the Chazon Ish held, and the Shlomo Zalman holds like this. That kula even applies to Yichud. So even if you assume that there is an Isser, in terms of when does it start, the more machmirim say it doesn't start till three. Certainly had till three. No one says it's before three. But then there's a whole school of thought that says till five or six. And then you have this sort of Moshe, who, a different part of the tshuva, it sounds like even if you want to be machmir, he still says the stomach be mutter until seven or eight. And as I said, you also have this heter of the issue of the, exactly, of the long time. Perhaps some would be makel, like they're supposed to suggest that if you have an adopted child, you should live in an apartment building. Because as long as you keep your door open, and in theory, obviously, traffic in between apartments is a lot more common than it is in between houses, that might also be a head there. As I say, aside from being complicated, these are also sensitive issues. I know there are many complicated situations out there. I wasn't trying to paint anything with a broad brush, just trying to expose you to some of these skitas, and obviously, to the extent that you know of anyone who has this as a particular shaila, so those should be handled particularly by that person's rough. Yes, 100%. 100%.